Dr. Ronald Swatsina, director and chief scientist of the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center, inspired our clinician detective series. In his Association for Applied Psychophysiology and Biofeedback, APB, Distinguished Scientist Address, he reminded his audience that the DSM-5 requires systematically ruling out general medical conditions before assigning a psychiatric diagnosis to ensure diagnostic validity and appropriate treatment planning. He argued that in abrupt onset and refractory cases, EEG biomarkers should challenge neurofeedback providers and their medical colleagues to become detectives to identify their causes. This collaborative approach allows each professional to contribute to the assessment while staying in their lane. Dr. Swatsina generously mentors professionals in his investigative method, including raw EEG interpretation, to train the next generation of neurofeedback clinicians. Introduction: Seeing the brain clearly requires more than maps. This post is based on Dr. Swatsina's outstanding BCIA webinar, The Yeah Buts of QEG, Why the QEG Doesn't Always Tell the Full Story. We encourage you to purchase this neurofeedback mentoring webinar from BCIA. In modern neurofeedback and psychophysiological practice, quantitative EEG, QEG, offers enticing possibilities. The QEG processes EEG data to generate statistical and visual maps of brain activity. These brain maps, derived from statistical comparisons of an individual's EEG with normative databases, appear to provide a quick insight into abnormal patterns. They render in vivid topographies what was once inscrutable to the untrained eye. However, relying solely on these maps without inspecting the underlying raw electroencephalogram, EEG, can lead to clinical errors, misdiagnoses, or misguided training protocols. This post affirms the value of QEG as a complementary tool in neurofeedback and psychophysiological assessment. Topographic maps and statistical comparisons can highlight meaningful patterns when appropriately interpreted. However, the QEG should never precede or replace the visual inspection of the raw EEG. Clinical accuracy depends on seeing what the brain is actually doing moment by moment, not just what the averages suggest. Used responsibly, the QEG enhances interpretation. Used in isolation, it risks misrepresentation. The position advanced here is not anti-QEG, but pro-context. Maps should follow, not substitute for, the examination of raw waveforms. This post will argue that reading the raw EEG is not optional. It is essential. Drawing on examples provided by Dr. Swatsina, we will explore how artifacts masquerade as pathophysiology, how misclassifications arise from fixed frequency bends, and why morphology, the shape and rhythm of brain waves, matters. We will illustrate how QEG maps, though valuable, often prioritize the brain's statistical sky over its physiological ground. When we consider the power of QEG, it is easy to be seduced by its visual clarity and the precision of its comparisons. However, the underlying reality is far more nuanced. A brain map may highlight abnormalities, but unless those features are visible and interpretable in the raw EEG, their clinical meaning may be doubtful or outright misleading. Clinicians are often unaware that QEG relies heavily on data quality, artifact rejection methods, and bandpass filters that may erase or distort meaningful events. Moreover, normative databases are often built from select populations and do not accurately reflect neurodiverse presentations. The only way to ensure that the statistical map corresponds to neurophysiological reality is to examine the EEG in its unfiltered, continuous waveform form. In this way, reading the raw EEG is not an optional enhancement. It is the bedrock of valid neurophysiological interpretation. The map is not the territory. How QEG can mislead. Jay Gunkelman's warning against becoming a hotspotologist is a caution against overinterpreting isolated areas of deviation on QEG topographic maps without confirming them in the raw EEG. Hotspotology refers to focusing narrowly on bright or dark region statistical hotspots in color-coded brain maps and assuming they represent true neural abnormalities that warrant intervention. This approach can jeopardize client care because these apparent deviations may be caused by transient artifacts, non-neuronal signals, such as sweat, or eye movement, or statistical outliers that are not supported by the underlying electrophysiological activity. When clinicians act on hotspots without verifying morphology, rhythmicity, and context in the raw EEG, they risk treating artifacts as pathology, suppressing healthy brain function, or missing more diffuse or transient patterns that better explain the client's symptoms. As this post shows through Dr. Swatsina's case examples, raw EEG review is essential to differentiate genuine physiological findings from misleading statistical anomalies. Gunkelman's warning is thus a call to maintain rigorous clinical standards, where interpretation is grounded in electrophysiological validity, not aesthetic map features. The quantitative EEG, QEG, utilizes statistical algorithms to transform raw EEG signals into topographic maps that display power, asymmetry, and coherence across the scalp. These maps use color-coded gradients to indicate the power or connectivity of different frequency bands at various electrode locations, offering a statistical snapshot of brain function compared to a normative database. While they can highlight deviations from typical patterns, these maps average activity over time and may obscure brief but clinically meaningful events. Therefore, clinicians must interpret topographic findings within the context of the raw EEG, which preserves the temporal detail and waveform morphology essential for accurate analysis. These maps are only as accurate as their input data and can be catastrophically misleading if that data includes unrecognized artifacts. An artifact is any signal that is not generated by cortical neurons, such as eye movement, muscle tension, sweat, or electrical interference. One striking example presented by Dr. Swatsina involved excessive delta power in frontal regions. While a QEG map flagged this as pathological, a review of the raw EEG revealed it was caused by slow eye movements, not cerebral dysfunction. Another example featured a clinician who submitted a beautifully flat, low-voltage EEG recording for quantitative EEG, QEG, processing. The maps appeared strikingly symmetrical and showed minimal deviations from the norm. However, this perfection was suspicious. Upon inspection of the raw EEG, it became apparent that the patient had made no eye movements whatsoever, and the overall signal amplitude was far below what is typical for a resting EEG. Further investigation revealed that the EEG cap had been moist from prior use, leading to current spread and signal attenuation. What appeared to be a neurologically underpowered brain was actually a result of equipment and preparation failure. If interpreted in isolation, the QEG map might have prompted unnecessary medical referrals, misdiagnosis, or cognitive decline. The issue here is not with the QEG technology itself, but with the assumption that maps can replace the need for clinical interpretation. A map is only a model, and like any model, it carries assumptions, blind spots, and distortions. The algorithms that generate statistical comparisons do not know whether a given pattern is due to biology or equipment error. Only a trained human eye can make that determination by comparing the raw waveforms to known physiological norms. Moreover, many clinicians outsource their QEG processing to third-party labs that use automated artifact rejection. These systems may exclude segments of data with blinking or movement, inadvertently deleting clinically significant information like brief discharges or focal slowing. In both cases, raw EEG inspection served as the safeguard against erroneous interpretation. It revealed what the automated system could not, the true nature of the signal. Without it, the clinician might have pursued inappropriate interventions based on artificial features. This underscores the point that QEG maps reflect a processed abstraction. They are not the objective truth, and their validity depends entirely on what lies beneath. Reading the raw EEG is not merely a professional courtesy. It is the only way to validate a map clinically. By committing to a visual inspection of the EEG record, clinicians can ensure that treatment decisions are grounded in biological evidence rather than statistical artifacts. Artifacts in disguise, when eye movements and muscle tension impersonate EEG waveforms. Many QEG users fail to realize just how often non-neural signals contaminate EEG data. Eye movements can produce low-frequency transients, especially in the frontal leads, that may resemble delta activity in topographic displays. These ocular artifacts, including blinks and vertical saccades, typically generate slow, biphasic waves that can be mistaken for frontal delta or theta unless carefully identified through morphology and topographic distribution in the raw EEG. Ocular artifacts are especially problematic in prefrontal electrodes, exactly where many protocols target anxiety or executive function. In one example presented by Dr. Swatsina, the delta appears in F7 and F8, the lateral prefrontal leads. On the map, it looked pathological. However, the raw EEG told a different story. The waves were steep, asymmetric, and time-locked to blinks. They were not true cortical delta waves, but rather simply eye movements. Muscle tension presents another insidious challenge. Electromyographic, EMG, artifact produces high-frequency noise, often contaminating the beta and gamma bands. EMG artifact is the contamination of the EEG by muscle activity, commonly found in the temporalis and frontalis muscle regions again, where clinicians often focus. Without examining the waveform morphology, its contour, frequency, and rhythmicity, these artifacts may be mistaken for hyperarousal or even seizure activity. One example showed beta excess that resolved when the patient stopped clenching their jaw. The patient was initially thought to have anxiety-related overactivation, but in truth, was exhibiting facial tension under stress. Misidentifying this as cortical beta could have resulted in unnecessary downtraining protocols, reducing true cortical activation and increasing mental fog. In another case, a practitioner observed elevated theta in a client who appeared to be falling asleep. The QEG map showed diffuse theta dominance, leading to a misdiagnosis of mild cognitive impairment. But raw EEG showed that the patient had been intermittently nodding off during the recording. This distinction matters. Treatment for cognitive decline versus treatment for drowsiness involves entirely different strategies, from neurofeedback targets to medical referrals. Without direct inspection of the raw EEG, such errors would go uncorrected. Sweat artifacts and electrode bridging, which can occur due to moist caps, can also obscure interpretation. Sweat artifacts comprise low-frequency, high-amplitude signal distortion caused by perspiration altering electrode impedance or conductance, often resulting in slow drifts that mimic delta activity. Electrode bridging artifacts result from signal contamination caused by conductive gel or moisture spreading between adjacent electrodes, leading to artificial synchrony or signal flattening due to volume conduction. A low-voltage EEG might be due not to cortical underactivation, but to poor contact, saline spread, or skin conductance shifts. In one example, a child's EEG was interpreted as globally suppressed. The QEG showed unusually flat power across all bands. Upon inspection, it was determined that the cap had been applied while the child was sweating and agitated. After re-recording in a cooler environment with dried electrodes, the EEG showed strong, healthy alpha and beta activity. The initial map had falsely portrayed the child as encephalopathic. By relying solely on QEG maps, clinicians may inadvertently treat non-existent deficits or overlook genuine ones. The raw EEG, in contrast, allows direct inspection of the waveforms, enabling clinicians to spot contamination, validate rhythms, and make defensible judgments. Artifact identification is a skill developed over time. The more EEGs a clinician reads, the more proficient they become at identifying anomalies that machines cannot flag. Without this scrutiny, the risk of treating artifacts as pathology remains unacceptably high. Fixed frequency bands, the problem with arbitrary bands. One of the lesser known but critical limitations of QEG is its reliance on fixed frequency bands predetermined ranges such as delta, 1 to 4 Hz, theta, 4 to 8 Hz, alpha, 8 to 12 Hz, beta, 12 to 30 Hz, and gamma, greater than 30 Hz. While these bands are rooted in tradition and offer convenience, they often fail to capture individual variability. Brainwave frequencies do not always conform to these neat boundaries. Dr. Swatsina provided several examples where fixed bands led to misclassifications with serious clinical implications. For instance, in a case involving a teenager referred for an ADHD evaluation, the QEG map showed elevated theta and diminished beta, indicating a high theta to beta ratio. However, visual inspection of the raw EEG revealed a dominant rhythm centered at 7.8 Hz. This slow alpha was misclassified as theta, artificially inflating theta power. As a result, the map suggested cognitive underarousal when the underlying physiology reflected an idiosyncratic alpha peak. In another example, a high-performing college student with complaints of anxiety showed no significant abnormalities on their QEG report. Yet raw EEG inspection told a different story. The student's alpha peak was at 12.5 Hz, meaning much of their alpha activity had bled into the lower beta band. The QEG system, adhering rigidly to predefined bins, categorized this as beta excess while underrepresenting true alpha power. Consequently, no meaningful alpha peak was detected and no alpha reactivity could be assessed. If a clinician were to rely solely on the map, they might incorrectly conclude that the patient lacked a posterior alpha rhythm, a classic indicator of neurotypical resting state regulation. The risk of error becomes even greater when clinical decisions are based on derivative measures, such as the theta/beta ratio, widely used in ADHD screening. This ratio is computed from the absolute or relative power in the theta and beta bands. However, if either band is contaminated by misclassified alpha, the ratio becomes meaningless. Alpha waves below 8 Hz increase the theta/beta ratio and create the illusion of hypercoherence. Conversely, alpha above 12 Hz decreases the theta/beta ratio and creates the illusion of hypocoherence. These errors are produced by a normative database's fixed alpha and theta ranges. Dr. Swatsina emphasized how a skewed theta/beta ratio, based on incorrect binning, can mislead physicians toward prescribing stimulants inappropriately. The risk is not merely theoretical. In some cases, children were placed on long-term stimulant regimens based on misleading ratios, despite raw EEGs showing strong alpha dominance and no true theta excess. Another pitfall of fixed bands is the inability to detect or accommodate bifurcated alpha peaks instances where a patient shows two distinct alpha frequencies, such as one at 7.5 Hz and another at 10.5 Hz. These profiles are often seen in transitional neurodevelopmental stages or individuals using substances such as THC. On a QEG map, such a profile may appear as alpha suppression or even disorganization. Although a relative power map cannot show bifurcated alpha, it can show where the slower peak is more dominant, for example, 7 to 8 Hz in the left temporal lobe. However, when visualized through a spectrogram or closely examined in the raw EEG, these double peaks become readily apparent. Dr. Swatsina noted that in one such case, a bifurcated alpha pattern was mistaken for excessive theta and low SMR beta, again leading to treatment based on artifact rather than fact. To make matters more complex, normative databases vary in how they define frequency bins and the criteria used to compute deviation scores. A 10 Hz alpha in one database may be perceived as dominant and healthy, while in another, it may barely register above baseline. These discrepancies can lead to inconsistent interpretations across providers and platforms. Dr. Swatsina urged clinicians to consider raw EEG review as a form of triangulation, confirming whether deviations shown on the map align with what the brain is actually doing. Frequency misclassification is not just a data issue. It's a clinical hazard. Ultimately, QEG frequency bins represent convenient simplifications of complex, individualized brain rhythms. While useful for broad comparisons, they can obscure or distort meaningful differences when applied rigidly. By contrast, raw EEG analysis respects the continuous nature of brain oscillations, allowing clinicians to adapt their interpretation to the individual rather than the protocol. As Dr. Swatsina repeatedly emphasized, if clinicians are to move from map reading to clinical neurophysiology, they must prioritize waveform observation over arbitrary metrics. Only then can frequency-based metrics, such as the theta/beta ratio, regain their clinical utility. Signal shape matters, morphology as a diagnostic compass. The importance of waveform morphology, how EEG waves look over time, cannot be overstated. While frequency and amplitude offer quantitative metrics, morphology allows qualitative interpretation. Dr. Swatsina repeatedly emphasized that certain shapes correspond to specific neurophysiological phenomena. For example, sinusoidal alpha waves, characterized by their smooth and rounded contours, reflect stable thalamocortical loops, and are often observed in calm, awake individuals with their eyes closed. In contrast, theta waves appear flatter and more irregular, often associated with drowsiness, inattention, or subcortical disinhibition. When raw EEG is ignored, these distinctions blur, and clinicians may act on incorrect assumptions. In one case, a patient's spiky alpha was flagged as epileptiform in a QEG report. But after examining the raw EEG, it became clear that the sharp appearance was due to overlapping alpha peaks, not pathology. Misidentifying this pattern could have led to the inappropriate use of anticonvulsants. Another powerful illustration came from a patient who exhibited transient spikes that were initially treated as muscle artifact. However, Dr. Swatsina reviewed the morphology and noted their consistent timing, topography, and after going slow wave hallmarks of epileptiform discharges. These spikes were focal, occurring in the left temporal region, and their brief duration aligned with clinical symptoms of momentary confusion. The QEG maps, which average signals over time and rely on automated artifact rejection, had discarded these crucial events as noise. If the raw EEG had not been inspected, a seizure diagnosis would have been missed entirely. Morphology also helps distinguish between types of beta activity. Fast beta may be physiological in high-functioning individuals or pathological in the context of benzodiazepine withdrawal, traumatic brain injury, or neuroinflammation. Dr. Swatsina described the spindling beta pattern brief bursts of symmetrical, fast-frequency activity, sometimes referred to as F1 and F2 forms. F1 consists of small, low-amplitude bursts, while F2 represents larger, more disruptive patterns. These signatures can indicate a history of benzodiazepine use or sensitivity to GABAergic modulation. Such insight cannot be gleaned from color maps alone. It requires watching the wave unfold on screen. In another instructive case, bifurcated alpha, where two distinct frequencies appear within the alpha range, may be observed in transitional neurodevelopmental phases or in individuals with recent THC exposure. While not inherently pathological, this pattern may reflect altered thalamocortical regulation or neurochemical modulation, warranting a clinical context for interpretation. The raw EEG, however, showed clear rhythmicity at both 8 Hz and 11 Hz. This patient, a 14-year-old with fluctuating cognitive performance, was in a neurodevelopmental transition phase. Instead of interpreting the pattern as dysfunction, Dr. Swatsina framed it as a marker of delayed maturation, possibly exacerbated by THC use. This interpretation shifted the treatment direction from neurofeedback targeting alpha enhancement to strategies that support developmental regulation and substance education. Finally, Dr. Swatsina highlighted that morphology can signal underlying metabolic or toxic issues. One child's EEG showed low voltage, poorly formed alpha waves with intermittent sharp activity initially presumed to be nonspecific slowing. Upon further medical evaluation, the child was found to have mold toxicity and impaired methylation pathways. Without attention to morphology, this pattern would have been dismissed or labeled as nonspecific, delaying essential environmental and metabolic interventions. Morphology told a story the map could not have written. In sum, morphology is not cosmetic, it is diagnostic. Clinicians must become literate in waveform patterns, just as radiologists interpret shadowing or contour in imaging. As Dr. Swatsina argues, to treat the brain responsibly, we must not just measure its rhythms, we must learn to see them. The map misses the moment, background versus events. While QEG maps summarize average brain activity over time, they are blind to transient events brief, clinically significant discharges that last mere milliseconds. These momentary phenomena often vanish in statistical averaging and are discarded by automated artifact rejection systems. Dr. Swatsina emphasized that this is one of the most dangerous limitations of relying solely on processed maps. In one case, a child was repeatedly misdiagnosed with behavioral dysregulation, and his treatment history included various stimulant and mood stabilizer regimens. The QEG revealed no clear anomalies. But when Dr. Swatsina reviewed the raw EEG, he identified sharp transients near the central motor strip electrical discharges consistent with abdominal seizures. The child's erratic behavior and episodic stomach pain finally made sense. A referral to a pediatric neurologist confirmed the seizure activity, and after appropriate anticonvulsant treatment, the child's symptoms dramatically improved. The key clinical marker had been erased by artifact rejection. Another example involved a young woman experiencing episodes of emotional volatility and occasional disorientation. The QEG indicated left temporal slowing, but provided no definitive diagnostic pattern. Dr. Swatsina examined the raw EEG and noted intermittent spikes at T3, each followed by a slow wave A morphology consistent with temporal lobe epilepsy. These were isolated epileptiform discharges, IEDs, not frequent enough to influence average spectral power, but potentially significant in generating psychiatric symptoms. Treating this patient with traditional mood stabilizers or SSRIs would likely have worsened her condition. The same client exhibited 3 paroxysms within 10 minutes. These are episodic, sharply demarcated discharges that differ from the background EEG activity in frequency, morphology, and/or amplitude. A QEG map would not indicate to a clinician where to train, whereas the raw EEG can reveal the location of the first discharge. Following EEG confirmation and a second opinion, she was started on a low-dose anticonvulsant with positive clinical response. Once again, it was not the map, but the moment the raw discharge that told the true story. A similar pattern emerged in the EEG of a high-functioning adult with persistent anxiety, insomnia, and difficulty concentrating. His QEG maps indicated elevated beta, but lacked other defining abnormalities. Dr. Swatsina cautions that clinicians should be suspicious of QEG findings lacking clinical correlation. We should not attempt to train them if the raw EEG does not confirm them, as they are likely mirages. Dr. Swatsina observed rhythmic slowing in the left anterior temporal region, a potential marker for treatment-resistant depression, especially when accompanied by unresponsiveness to 3 or more antidepressants. This focal slowing was rhythmic and recurrent, but too spatially localized and brief to be considered significant on the QEG summary. It also guided a highly targeted referral for transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, which ultimately succeeded after multiple failed medication trials. None of this would have been possible without examining the transient pattern in raw form. Event-level analysis also plays a vital role in interpreting coherence and asymmetry patterns. One patient exhibited high frontal theta coherence on their QEG, suggesting hyperconnectivity often associated with developmental delays or traumatic brain injury. But the raw EEG revealed bursts of high-amplitude theta during drowsiness, interspersed with normal waking rhythms. These intermittent artifacts distorted the overall coherence calculation. Had they been interpreted as trait-level hypercoherence, the patient might have been subjected to unnecessary coherence training. Hypercoherence refers to an abnormally high level of synchronization between EEG signals at 2 or more electrode sites, often indicating reduced functional differentiation. Once the transients were recognized and excluded from interpretation, a much more accurate clinical picture emerged, one of fluctuating arousal rather than stable connectivity abnormality. Finally, Dr. Swatsina described a rare case involving low-voltage fast activity that initially appeared to be benign. However, upon reviewing the raw EEG, he noticed a progression of high-frequency activity evolving into a clear seizure pattern. The QEG had classified this section as normal beta, but in context, it was the prelude to a subclinical seizure. Instructed by this observation, the clinician referred the patient for continuous video EEG monitoring, which confirmed the seizure diagnosis. This example illustrates how QEG, by discarding context and temporal sequence, can obscure dynamic brain states that require immediate clinical attention. In each of these cases, the signal of interest, the diagnostic fingerprint, did not reside in the average data, but in the unique moment of emergence, disruption, or discharge. These are the moments when the brain speaks most clearly about its internal condition. Only the raw EEG can capture them in their full temporal and spatial nuance. Dr. Swatsina's cases repeatedly demonstrate that overlooking these moments in favor of maps risks missing the forest for the trees. In EEG, it is not just the pattern but the pulse that matters. Summary. Clinicians who work with EEG must not surrender their interpretive responsibility to software-generated QEG maps. As Dr. Swatsina's clinical cases show, maps provide a useful overview, but they cannot reveal the subtle dynamics, artifacts, or transient events that shape the diagnostic landscape. Raw EEG, in contrast, provides direct access to the brain's language, its pulses, shapes, and rhythms. Each waveform tells a story that a statistical average cannot. A hidden seizure, a misclassified alpha, a burst of muscle tension misread as beta excess. These differences are not technicalities, they are turning points in a person's diagnosis and treatment path. Across each of the five domains explored, misleading maps, hidden artifacts, frequency bin errors, morphological features, and overlooked transient say, clear message emerges. Clinical confidence must be grounded in visual confirmation. Every QEG map must be validated by inspecting the raw signal. Decisions should not be based solely on color gradients or deviation scores, but on patterns that a trained eye can trace across time and space. The work of interpretation requires skill, humility, and an unwavering commitment to understanding the individual brain before us, not just the normative group to which it is compared. When raw EEG is ignored, the clinician risks mistaking artifacts for insight and averages for answers. When raw EEG data is utilized, every clinical decision becomes more precise, more personalized, and more protective. This is not a rejection of QEG, it is its contextualization. Raw EEG is not a fallback. It is the standard. It anchors maps in meaning, guides training protocols with accuracy, and protects patients from misguided interventions. Ultimately, to treat the brain wisely, we must first learn to read it fluently. And that fluency begins with the raw. Key takeaways. 1. Always inspect the raw EEG before accepting QEG findings. Statistical maps may overlook or misclassify critical features, such as eye movements, muscle tension, or subtle discharges. 2. Artifacts frequently mimic pathology. Without waveform verification, eye blinks may resemble frontal delta, and jaw clenching may appear as beta excess, potentially leading to incorrect diagnoses. 3. Fixed frequency bands can misclassify normal activity. A slow alpha peak may be misinterpreted as theta, thereby inflating ADHD indices. A fast alpha peak may be incorrectly labeled as beta, thereby masking healthy rhythms. 4. Morphology matters. Spikes, sharp waves, and spindling beta patterns can only be accurately identified by reviewing the shape and sequence of waveforms in the raw EEG. 5. Transient events are often the most clinically important. Automated processes may discard isolated epileptiform discharges, brief slowing, or pre-seizure beta escalation, yet hold decisive clinical meaning. 6. QEG averages hide important variability. QEG maps flatten the temporal dynamics of brain activity, while raw EEG preserves the ebb and flow of real-time functioning. 7. Normative databases are limited in scope. They are based on population averages and may not adequately accommodate neurodiverse brains, high-functioning individuals, or individuals undergoing developmental transitions. 8. Interpretation is an expert skill, not a software output. Clinical insight requires pattern recognition, contextual understanding, and a trained eye skills that no algorithm can replace.